Chapter 58. That the nutritive, sensitive, and intellective faculties in man are not three souls. But the foregoing arguments, according to the opinion of Plato, can be answered, so far as the matter in hand is concerned. For Plato, that in us the same soul is not intellective, nutritive, and sensitive. Hence, even if the sensitive soul were the form of the body, we should not have to conclude that an intellectual substance can be the form of a body. That this opinion is impossible, we must show as follows. Things that are ascribed to one same thing according to various forms, are predicated of one another accidentally. For a white thing is said to be musical accidentally, because whiteness and music are ascribed to Socrates. Consequently, if in us the intellective, sensitive, and nutritive soul are various forces or forms, those things which are ascribed to us in respect of these forms will be predicated of one another accidentally. Now in respect of the intellective soul we are said to be men, according to the sensitive soul animals, according to the nutritive soul living. Therefore this predication man is an animal, or an animal is a living thing, will be accidental. But it is a per se, comma predication, since man, is an animal, and animal, as animal, is a living thing. Therefore it is from the same principle that one is a man, an animal, and a living thing. If, however, it be said that even if the aforesaid souls be distinct, it does not follow that the predication mentioned will be accidental, because these souls are mutually subordinate. We reply to this also, for the sensitive power is subordinate to the intellect, and the nutritive power to the sensitive, as potentiality is subordinate to act. For the intellect comes after the sensitive, and the sensitive after the nutritive in the order of generation, since in generation an animal is made before a man. Consequently if this order makes the aforesaid predications to be per se, this will not be taking per se in the sense that arises from the form, but in that which arises from matter and subject, as a superficies is said to be colored. But this is impossible, because when we use per se in this sense, that which is formal is predicated per se of the subject, as when we say the superficies is white or the number is even. Again when we use per se in this way, the subject is placed in the definition of the predicate, as number in the definition of even. But here the contrary happens, because man is not predicated of animal per se, but contrariwise, and again the subject is not placed in the definition of the predicate, but vice versa. Therefore the aforesaid definitions are not made per se by reason of the order in question. Further, a thing has unity from the same cause as it has being, for one is consequent upon being. Since then a thing has being from its form, it will have unity also from its form. Consequently if we say that there are in man three souls, as different forms, man will not be one being but several. Nor will the order of form suffice for the unity of man, because to be one with respect to order is not to be one simply, since unity of order is the least of unities. Again, the aforesaid difficulty will again arise, namely that from the intellective soul and the body there results one thing not simply but only accidentally. For whatever accrues to a thing after its complete being, accrues thereto accidentally, since it is outside its essence. Now every substantial form makes a complete being in the genus of substance, for it makes an actual being in this particular thing. Consequently whatever accrues to a thing after its first substantial form, will accrue to it accidentally. Hence, since the nutritive soul is a substantial form, for living is predicated substantially of man and animal, it will follow that the sensitive soul accrues accidentally, and likewise the intellective. And so neither animal nor man denotes one thing simply, nor a genus or species in the category of substance. Moreover, if man, in Plato's opinion, is not a thing composed of body and soul, but a soul using a body, this is to be understood either of the intellective soul only, or of the three souls, if there be three, or of two of them. If of three or two, it follows that man is not one thing, but two or three, for he is three souls or at least two. And if this be understood of the intellective soul only, so that the sensitive soul be understood to be the body's form, and the intellective soul, using the animated and sensified body, to be a man, this would again involve absurdities, namely that man is not an animal, but uses an animal, and that man does not sense but uses a sentient thing. And since these statements are inadmissible, it is impossible that there be in us three souls differing in substance, the intellective, the sensitive, and the nutritive. Further, one thing cannot be made of two or three, without something to unite them, unless one of them be to the other as act to potentiality, for thus a matter and form made one thing, without anything outside uniting them. Now if there be several souls in man, they are not mutually related as matter and form, but are only supposed to be acts and principles of action. It follows consequently, if they be united to form one thing, for instance a man or an animal, that there is something to unite them. But this cannot be the body, since rather is the body united together by the soul, a sign of which is that when the soul departs, the body perishes. It results then that there must be something more formal to make these several things into one, and this will be the soul rather than those several that are united by this thing. Wherefore if this again has various parts, and is not one thing in itself, there will still be need of something to unite them. Since then we cannot go on indefinitely, we must come to something that is one in itself, and such especially is the soul. Therefore there must be but one soul in one man or in one animal. Again, if that which belongs to the department of the soul in man is composed of several things, it follows that as the whole together is to the whole body, so each of them is to each part of the body. Nor does this disagree with Plato's opinion, for he placed the rational soul in the brain, the nutritive in the liver, and the appetite in the heart. But this is shown to be false, for two reasons. First, because there is a part of the soul which cannot be ascribed to any part of the body, namely the intellect, of which it has been proved, it is not the act of any part of the body. Secondly, because it is evident that the operations of different parts of the soul are observed in the same part of the body as evidenced in animals which live after being cut in two, since the same part has the movement, sensation, and appetite whereby it is moved. And again the same part of the plant, after being cut off, is nourished, grows and blossoms, whence it is evident that the various parts of the soul are in the one and same part of the body. Therefore there are not different souls in us, allotted to different parts of the body. Moreover, different forces that are not rooted in one principle do not hinder one another in acting, unless perhaps their action be contrary, which does not happen in the case in point. Now we find that the various actions of the soul hinder one another, since when one is intense another is remiss. It follows, then, that these actions, and the forces that are their proximate principles, must be reduced to one principle. But this principle cannot be the body, both because there is an action in which the body has no part, namely intelligence, and because, if the body as such were the principle of these forces and actions, they would be found in all bodies, which is clearly false. Consequently, it follows that their principle is some one form, by which this body is such a body and this is the soul. Therefore it follows that all the soul's actions which are in us, proceed from one soul. Wherefore there are not several souls in us. This is in agreement with what is said in the book De Ecclesiastici Dogmatibus, nor do we say that there are two souls in one man, as James and other Syrians write, one animal, by which the body is animated, and which is mingled with the blood, the other, spiritual, which supplies the reason, but we say that it is one and the same soul in man, that both gives life to the body by being united to it, and orders itself by its own reason. Chapter 59. That man's possible intellect is not a separate substance. Others, there have been, who discovered another reason for maintaining that the intellectual soul cannot be united to the body as its form, for they say that the intellect which Aristotle calls possible, is a separate substance not united to us as a form. They endeavor to prove this from the words of Aristotle, who says, speaking of this intellect, that it is separate, not mixed with the body, simple, impassible, which could not be said of it, if it were the body's form. Also, from the demonstration whereby he proves, that, since the possible intellect receives all the species of sensible things through being in potentiality to them, it must needs lack them all. Even so the pupil which receives the species of all colors, lacks all color, for if by itself it had any color, that color would prevent it seeing other colors, in fact it would see nothing but under that color. The same would happen with the possible intellect, if by itself it had any form or nature of sensible things, yet it would have to be so if it were bound up with the body. Likewise, if it were the form of a body because, since from form and matter there is made one thing, The form must participate something of the nature of which it is the form. Consequently, it is impossible that the possible intellect be bound up with the body, or be the act or form of a body. Further, if it were the form of a material body, the receptivity of such an intellect would be of the same kind as the receptivity of primary matter, because that which is the form of a body receives nothing without its matter. Now primary matter receives individual forms, in fact they are individualized through being in matter. Therefore the possible intellect would receive forms as they are individual and consequently would not be cognizant of universals, which is clearly false. Further, primary matter is not cognizant of the forms which it receives. Consequently if the receptivity of the possible intellect were the same as of primary matter, neither would the possible intellect know the forms it receives, and this is false. Moreover, there cannot possibly be an infinite power in a body, as proved by Aristotle. Now the possible intellect is, in a manner, of infinite power, since by it we judge of an infinite number of things, inasmuch as by it we know universals, under which potentially infinite particulars are contained. Therefore the possible intellect is not a power in a body. For these reasons of Rose was moved, and likewise some of the ancients, as he says, to hold that the possible intellect, by which the soul understands, has a separate being from the body, and is not the form of the body. Since however such an intellect would nowise belong to us, nor should we understand thereby, unless it were in some way united to us, he defines the way in which it comes into touch with us, saying that the species actually understood is the form of the possible intellect, just as the actually visible is the form of the visual power. Hence the results one thing from the possible intellect and the actually understood form. Consequently the possible intellect is united to whomsoever the aforesaid understood form is united. Now it is united to us by means of the phantasm, which is a kind of subject of that understood form, and in this way the possible intellect also is in touch with us. But it is easy to see that all this is nonsensical and impossible. For the one who understands is the one who has intellect, and the thing understood is the thing whose intelligible species is united to the intellect. Consequently though the intelligible species united to the intellect is in a man in some way, it does not follow that the man is the one who understands, but only that he is understood by the separate intellect. Further, the actually understood species is the form of the possible intellect, as the visible species in act is the form of the visual power, or of the eye itself. Now the understood species is compared to the phantasm as the visible species in act is compared to the colored object outside the soul. In fact he uses this comparison himself, as also does Aristotle. Therefore by the intelligible form the possible intellect is in touch with the phantasm which is in us, in the same way as the visual power with the color that is in the stone. But this contact does not make the stone to see but to be seen. Therefore also the aforesaid contact of the possible intellect with us does not make us to understand, but only to be understood. Now it is clear that it is properly and truly said that man understands, for we would not inquire into the nature of the intellect except for the fact that we understand ourselves. Therefore the aforesaid manner of contact is not sufficient. Again, every knower by its cognitive power is united to its object, and not vice versa, just as every operator by its operative power is united to the thing operated. Now man is intelligent by his intellect as by his cognitive power. Therefore he is not united to the intellect by the intelligible form, but by the intellect he is united to the intelligible. Moreover, that by which a thing operates must be its form, for nothing acts except in so far as it is in act, and a thing is not in act except by that which is its form. Wherefore Aristotle proves that the soul is a form, from the fact that in animal lives and senses through the soul. Now man understands, and this by his intellect only. Wherefore Aristotle, when inquiring into the principle whereby we understand, describes to us the nature of the possible intellect. The possible intellect must be united to us formally and not merely by its object. Further, the intellect in act and the intelligible in act are one, just as the sense in act and the sensible in act. Not so however are the intellect in potentiality and the intelligible in potentiality, nor the sense in potentiality and the sensible in potentiality. Wherefore the species of a thing according as it is in the phantasms is not actually intelligible, for it is not thus that it is one with the intellect in act, but as abstracted from the phantasms. Even so, neither is the species of color actually perceived according as it is in the stone, but only according as it is in the pupil. Now, according to the opinion stated above, the intelligible species is in contact with us only according as it is in the phantasms. Therefore, it is not in contact with us according as it is one with the possible intellect as its form. Consequently, it cannot be the means of bringing the possible intellect into contact with us, since according as it is in contact with the possible intellect, it is not in contact with us, nor vice versa. Now it is evident that he who devised this opinion was deceived by an equivocation. For colors existing outside the soul, given the presence of light, are actually visible as being able to move the sight, and not as actually perceived, according as they are one with the sense in act. In like manner, the phantasms are made actually intelligible by the light of the active intellect, so that they can move the possible intellect, but not so that they be actually understood, according as they are one with the possible intellect made actual. Again, where the living thing has a higher operation, there is a higher kind of life corresponding to that operation. For in plants we find only an action pertaining to nutrition. In animals we find a higher operation, namely sensation and local movement, wherefore the animal lives by a higher kind of life. But in man we find a yet higher vital operation than in the animal, namely intelligence. Therefore man must have a higher kind of life. Now life is through the soul. Therefore man will have a higher soul, whereby he lives, than is the sensitive soul. But none is higher than the intellect. Therefore the intellect is man's soul, and consequently it is his form. 150 Further, that which is consequent on the operation of a thing, does not give a thing its species, because operation is a second act, whereas the form whereby a thing has species is the first act. Now the union of the possible intellect with man, according to the above opinion, is consequent on man's operation, for it takes place through the medium of the phantasm, which, according to the philosopher, is a movement resulting from the sense in act. Therefore man does not take his species from that union, and consequently man differs from dumb animals by the fact that he has an intellect. Moreover, if man takes his species from being rational and having an intellect, whoever is in the human species is rational and intelligent. But a child, even before leaving the womb, is in the human species, and yet it has not phantasms that are actually intelligible. Therefore a man has not an intellect through the intellect being in contact with man by means of an intelligible species, the subject of which is a phantasm. Chapter 60. That man derives high species not from the passive, but from the possible intellect. To these arguments there is a reply on the lines of the foregoing opinion. For the said of Rose maintains that man differs in species from brutes by the intellect, which Aristotle calls passive, which is the same as the cogitative power that is proper to man, in place of which other animals have a certain natural estimative power. And it belongs to this cogitative power to distinguish individual intentions and to compare them with one another, just as the intellect, which is separate and unmixed, compares and distinguishes universal intentions. And since by this power, together with the imagination and memory, the phantasms are prepared to receive the addition of the active intellect, whereby they are made actually intelligible, just as certain arts prepare the matter for the master craftsman. Therefore the aforesaid power is called by the name of intellect or reason, which physicians declare to be seated in the middle cell of the head. And according to the disposition of this power, one man differs from another in genius and other points pertaining to intelligence. Also by the use and practice thereof man acquires the habit of science, so that the habits of science are in this passive intellect as their subject. Moreover this passive intellect is in the child from the beginning, and through it the child receives its human species before understanding actually. But it is easy to see that all this is untrue and an abuse of terms. For vital operations are compared to the soul, as second acts to the first, as Aristotle declares in De Anima. Now in the one subject first act precedes the second in point of time, just as knowledge precedes consideration. Hence in whatever thing we find a vital operation, we must place some part of the soul that will be compared to that operation as first to second act. Now man above other animals has a proper operation, namely intelligence and reasoning, which is the operation of man, as Aristotle states 1 Ethic. Therefore we must place in man a principle that properly gives him his species, and is compared to the act of intelligence as first to second act. But this cannot be the aforesaid passive intellect, since the principle of this same operation must needs be impassible and not mixed with the body. As the philosopher proves, it is clearly the contrary with a passive intellect. Therefore it is not possible that the species whereby man differs from other animals should come to him through the cogitative power that is called the passive intellect. Again, that which is a passion of the sensitive part cannot place a thing in a higher kind of life than the sensitive life, just as that which is a passion of the nutritive soul does not place a thing in a higher kind of life than the nutritive. Now it is clear that the imagination and the like powers which are consequent upon it, such as the memory and so forth, are passions of the sensitive faculty, as the philosopher proves in his book De Memoria. Consequently, an animal cannot be placed by these powers or by any one of them in a higher kind of life than the sensitive. But man is in a higher kind of life, as is proved from the philosopher, who, in distinguishing the kinds of life, places the intellective which he ascribes to man above the sensitive which he ascribes to all animals in common. Therefore it is not through the aforesaid cogitative power that man is a living being with a life proper to himself. Moreover, every self-mover, as the philosopher proves 8 physics, composed of mover and moved. Now man, like the animals, is a self-mover. Therefore mover and moved are parts of him. But the first mover in man is the intellect, for the intellect by its intelligible object moves the will. Nor can it be said that the passive intellect alone is the mover, since the passive intellect is only of particulars, while in moving there comes into play both the universal opinion which belongs to the possible intellect, and the particular statement which may belong to the passive intellect, as we gather from Aristotle. Therefore the possible intellect is a part of man and is the most noble and most formal thing in him, and consequently he takes his species from it and not from the passive intellect. Further, the possible intellect is proved not to be the act of a body from the fact of its taking cognizance of all sensible forms in a universal. Therefore no power, the operation of which can extend to the universals of all sensible forms, can be the act of a body. Now such is the will, since our will can extend to all the things that we can understand, at least so that we will to know them. Moreover the act of the will is clearly directed to the universal, since, as Aristotle says in his Rhetoric, we hate the robber kind and the universal, but are enraged only with the individuals. Consequently the will cannot be the act of a part of the body, nor can it be consequent upon a power that is an act of the body. Now any part of the soul is an act of the body, except the intellect alone properly so called. Hence the will is in the intellective part, wherefore also Aristotle says, that the will is in the reason, but the irascible and concupiscible are in the sensitive part. On account of this the acts of the concupiscible and irascible are associated with passion, whereas the act of the will is not, but with choice. Now man's will is not outside man, as though it were vested in a separate substance, but is in man himself. Else he would not be master of his own actions, for he would be acted upon by the will of a separate substance, and in him there would only be the appetitive powers that operate with passion, namely the irascible and the concupiscible, which are in the sensitive part, as in other animals which are acted upon rather than act themselves. But this is impossible and would do away with all moral philosophy and social intercourse. Wherefore the possible intellect must be in us, so that we differ thereby from dumb animals, and not only by the passive intellect. Again, just as nothing is able to act except through an inherent active potentiality, so nothing is able to be passive except through an inherent passive potentiality. For the combustible is not only able to be burned because there is something able to burn it, but also because it has in itself a potentiality to be burned. Now to understand is a kind of passion, as stated in 3 De Anima. Since then a child is potentially understanding, although he understands not actually, there must be in him a potentiality whereby he is able to understand, and this potentiality is the possible intellect. Consequently the possible intellect must already be in touch with the child before he understands actually. Therefore the contact of the possible intellect with man is not through the actually understood form, but the possible intellect itself is in a man from the beginning as a part of him. The said of Rose replies to this argument. For he says that a child is said to be understanding potentially in 2 ways. First, because the phantasms in him are potentially intelligible. Secondly, because the possible intellect is able to come in touch with him, and not because the intellect is already united to him. Now we have to prove that either way is insufficient, for the potentiality by which the agent is able to act is distinct from the potentiality whereby the patient is able to be passive, and they differ as being opposite to one another. Consequently, from the fact that a thing is able to be active, it is not competent to it to be passive. Now to be able to understand is to be able to be passive, since to understand is a kind of passion, according to the philosopher. Therefore the child is not said to be able to understand, from the mere fact that the phantasms in him are able to be actually understood, since this pertains to being able to act, for the phantasms move the possible intellect. Again, a potentiality consequent on the species of a thing does not belong to it by reason of that which does not give that thing its species. Now ability to understand is consequent on the human species, for understanding is an operation of man as such. Whereas the phantasms do not give man his species, on the contrary they are consequent on his operation. Therefore the child cannot be said to be potentially understanding by reason of the phantasms. Likewise, neither can a child be said to be potentially understanding, because the possible intellect is able to be in touch with him. For a person is said to be able to act or to be passive by active or passive potentiality, just as he is said to be white by whiteness. Now he is not said to be white before whiteness is united to him. Therefore neither is one said to be able to act or to be passive before the active or passive potentiality is in him. Consequently, it cannot be said of a child that he is able to understand before the possible intellect, which is the power of understanding, is in touch with him. Further, a person is said in one way to be able to act before having the nature whereby he acts, and in another way after he has the nature already, but is accidentally hindered from acting, even as a body is said in one way to be able to be lifted upwards before it is light, and in another way after it is made light, but is hindered in its movement. Now a child is potentially understanding, not as though he has not yet the nature to understand, but as having an obstacle to understanding, for he is hindered from understanding on account of the manifold movements in him, as stated in 7 Physic. Wherefore he is not said to be potentially understanding, on account of the possibility of coming in touch with the possible intellect which is the principle of understanding, but because it is already in touch with him and is hindered from its proper action, so that as soon as the obstacle is removed, he understands. Again, a habit is that whereby one acts at will. Consequently a habit must be in the same subject as the operation that is according to that habit. But to consider by understanding, which is the act of the habit of science, cannot be in the passive intellect, but belongs to the possible intellect, because in order that a power understand, it behoves it not to be the act of a body. Therefore the habit of science is not in the passive but in the possible intellect. Now science is in us, since according thereto we are said to know scientifically. Therefore the possible intellect also is in us, and has not a being separate from us. Further, the assimilation of science is of the knower to the thing known. Now the knower is not assimilated to the thing known, as such, except in respect of universal species, for science is about such things. But universal species cannot be in the passive intellect, since it is a power using an organ, but only in the possible intellect. Therefore science is not in the passive, but only in the possible intellect. Moreover, the intellect in habit, as the opponent admits, is the effect of the active intellect. Now the effects of the active intellect are things actually intelligible, the proper recipient of which is the possible intellect, to which the active intellect is compared as art to material. According to Aristotle, the intellect in habit, which is the habit of science, must be in the possible, and not in the passive intellect. Further, it is impossible that the perfection of a higher substance depend on a lower. Now the perfection of the possible intellect depends on the action of man, for it depends on the phantasms which move the possible intellect. Therefore the possible intellect is not a higher substance than man. Therefore it must be part of man as his act and form. Again, whatsoever things are separate as to being, are also separate as to operation, because things are for the sake of their operations, as first act for the sake of the second. Wherefore Aristotle says, that if any operation of the soul is apart from the body, it is possible for the soul to be separated. Now the operation of the possible intellect requires the body, for the philosopher says, that the intellect can act by itself, that is it can understand, when it has been made actual by a species abstracted from phantasms, which are not apart from the body. Therefore the possible intellect is not altogether separate from the body. Moreover, a thing has by nature those attributes without which its connatural operation cannot be accomplished. Thus Aristotle proves, that if the movement of the stars were progressive like that of animals, nature would have given them the organs of progressive movement. Now the operation of the possible intellect is accomplished through corporeal organs, which are necessary as subjects of the phantasms. Therefore nature has united the possible intellect to corporeal organs, and consequently, it has not a being separate from the body. Again, if it had a being separate from the body, it would understand substances that are separate from matter rather than sensible forms, for they are more intelligible, and more conformed to the intellect. Yet it cannot understand substances that are altogether separate from matter, since there are no phantasms of them, whereas this intellect nowise understands without phantasms, as Aristotle says, because the phantasms are to it as sensibles to the senses, and without these the sense has no sensation. Therefore it is not a substance separate from the body in being. Further, in every genus the passive potentiality extends as far as the active potentiality of that genus, wherefore there is not in nature a passive potentiality, to which there does not correspond a natural active potentiality. But the active intellect makes only the phantasms to be intelligible. Therefore neither is the passive intellect moved by other intelligibles than the species abstracted from the phantasms, and thus it is unable to understand separate substances. Moreover, the species of sensible things are in separate substances intelligibly, and by those species they have knowledge of sensibles. If therefore the possible intellect understood separate substances, it would receive in them the knowledge of sensibles. Consequently it would not receive this knowledge from phantasms, since nature's abundance does not consist of superfluities. If, however, it be said that separate substances have no knowledge of sensibles, it must at least be granted that they have a higher knowledge. And this knowledge must not be lacking to the possible intellect, if it understands the said substances. Consequently, it will have a twofold knowledge, one after the manner of separate substances, the other received from the senses, one of which would be superfluous. Further, it is the possible intellect whereby the soul understands, as stated in 3 De Anima. If therefore the possible intellect understands separate substances, we also understand them. Yet this is clearly untrue, for we stand in relation to them as the eye of the owl to the sun, as Aristotle says. To these arguments it is replied according to the aforesaid opinion. The possible intellect, so far as it is self-subsistent, understands separate substances, and is in potentiality to them as a transparent body to the light. Whereas in so far as it is in touch with us, it is in potentiality from the beginning to forms abstracted from the phantasms. Hence we do not from the beginning understand separate substances by it. But this will not hold, for the possible intellect, according to them, is said to be in touch with us, through being perfected by intelligible species abstracted from the phantasms. Consequently the intellect is to be considered as in potentiality to these species before being in touch with us. Wherefore it is not by its being in touch with us that it is in potentiality to these species. Further, according to this, the fact of its being in potentiality to these species would belong to it not in itself but through something else. Now a thing ought not to be defined by those things which do not belong to it in itself. Therefore the definition of the possible intellect should not be taken from its being in potentiality to the aforesaid species, as Aristotle defines it in 3 De Anima. Further, it is impossible for the possible intellect to understand several things at the same time, unless it understand one through another, since one power is not perfected at the same time by several acts except according to order. If, therefore, the possible intellect understands separate substances, and species abstracted from phantasms, it must either understand separate substances through these species, or vice versa. Now whichever be granted, it follows that we understand separate substances. For if we understand the natures of sensibles for as much as the possible intellect understands them, and the possible intellect understands them through understanding separate substances, we must understand them in the same way, and in like manner if the case be the reverse. But this is clearly false. Therefore the possible intellect does not understand separate substances, and consequently, it is not a separate substance. Chapter 61. that the aforesaid opinion is contrary to that of Aristotle. Since, however, Averroes endeavors to strengthen his position by appealing to authority, and says, that Aristotle was of the same opinion, we shall prove clearly that the aforesaid opinion is contrary to that of Aristotle. First, because Aristotle tu de anima, defines the soul by saying that the soul is the first act of an organic physical body having life potentially, and afterwards he adds, that this definition applies universally to every soul, not, as the said Averroes pretends, a doubt on the point, as evidenced by the Greek text and the translation of Boethius. Afterwards in the same chapter, he adds that certain parts of the soul are separable. Now these are no other than the intellective parts. It follows therefore that these parts are acts of the body. Nor is this gainsaid by what he says afterwards, nothing so far is clear about the intellect and the power of understanding, but it would seem to be another kind of soul. For he does not wish by this to accept the intellect from the common definition of a soul, but to exclude it from the natures proper to the other parts. Thus he who says animals that fly are of another kind from those that walk, does not remove the common definition of animal from those that fly. Wherefore, to show in what sense he said another, he adds, and this alone can be separated as the everlasting from the corruptible. Nor is it Aristotle's intention, as the said commentator pretends, to say that he has not yet made it clear concerning the intellect, whether the intellect be the soul, as he had done concerning the other principles. For the genuine text does not read, nothing has been declared or nothing has been said, but nothing is clear, which we must understand as referring to that which is proper to the soul, and not as referring to the common definition. And if, as he says, soul is said equivocally of the intellect and other souls, he Aristotle would first have explained the equivocation, and given the definition afterwards, as is his wont. Else his argument would have laboured under an equivocation, which is not allowable in demonstrative sciences. Again, inter de anima, comma, he reckons the intellect among the powers of the soul, and in the passage quoted, he calls it the power of understanding. Therefore the intellect is not outside the human soul, but is one of its powers. Again, in the three de anima, when he begins to speak of the possible intellect, he calls it a part of the soul, for the text reads of the part of the soul whereby the soul has knowledge and wisdom, thus clearly indicating that the possible intellect is a part of the soul. He is yet more explicit, when he goes on to declare the nature of the possible intellect, in these words: by the intellect I mean that by which the soul knows and understands. This evidently denotes that the intellect is a part of the human soul, whereby the soul understands. Therefore the aforesaid position is contrary to the opinion of Aristotle, and to the truth, and consequently is to be rejected as a mere fabrication. Chapter 62. Against the opinion of Alexander about the possible intellect. Having taken these sayings of Aristotle into consideration, Alexander asserted that the possible intellect is a power in us, so that the common definition of a soul given by Aristotle might apply thereto. But as he could not understand how an intellectual substance could be the form of a body, he said that the aforesaid power is not rooted in an intellectual substance, and that it is consequent on the mixture of the elements in the human body. For the particular mode of mixture in the human body makes man to be in potentiality to receive the inflow of the active intellect, which is always in act, and according to him is a separate substance, the result of which inflow is that man is made to understand actually. Now in man that whereby he is potentially understanding is the possible intellect. Consequently, it followed apparently that the possible intellect in us is a result of a particular mixture. But at the first glance this opinion is seen to be in contradiction with both the words and the proof of Aristotle. For as already stated, Aristotle proves in the three de anima, comma, that the possible intellect is not mixed with the body. Now this could not be said of a power resulting from the mixture of the elements, for a thing of the kind must needs be rooted in the mixture itself of the elements, as we see in the case of taste, smell, and the like. Therefore seemingly the aforesaid opinion of Alexander is inconsistent with the words and proof of Aristotle. To this Alexander replies that the possible intellect is merely the preparedness in the human nature to receive the inflow of the active intellect, and preparedness is not a particular sensible nature, Nor is it mixed with the body, for it is a relation and the order of one thing to another. But this clearly disagrees with the intention of Aristotle, for Aristotle proves that the reason why the possible intellect is not confined to any particular sensible nature, and consequently is not mixed with the body, is because it is receptive of all the forms of sensibles, and cognizant of them. Now this cannot be understood of preparedness, for it denotes not receiving but being prepared to receive. Therefore Aristotle's proof refers not to preparedness, but to a prepared recipient. Moreover, if what Aristotle says of the possible intellect applies to it inasmuch as it is a preparedness, and not on account of the nature of the subject prepared, it follows that it applies to every preparedness. Now in the senses there is a preparedness to receive sensibles actually. Therefore the same applies to the senses as to the possible intellect. And yet Aristotle clearly says the contrary, when he shows the difference between the receptivity of sense and of intellect, from the fact that sense is corrupted by the excellence of its objects, but not the intellect. Again, Aristotle says of the possible intellect that it is passive to the intelligible, that it receives intelligible species, that it is in potentiality to them. He also compares it to a tablet whereon nothing is written, none of which things can be said of preparedness, but only of the subject prepared. It is therefore contrary to the intention of Aristotle that the possible intellect should be the same as preparedness. Again, the agent is more noble than the patient, and the maker than the thing made, as act in comparison with potentiality. Now the more immaterial a thing is, the more noble it is. Therefore the effect cannot be more immaterial than the cause. But every cognitive power, as such, is immaterial. Hence Aristotle says of sense to de anima, it is receptive of sensible species without matter. Consequently, it is impossible for a cognitive power to result from a mixture of elements. Now the possible intellect is the highest cognitive power in us, for Aristotle says that the possible intellect is whereby the soul knows and understands. Therefore the possible intellect is not caused by the mixture of the elements. Moreover, if the principle of an operation proceeds from certain causes, that operation must not surpass those causes, since the second cause acts by virtue of the first. Now even the operation of the nutritive soul exceeds the power of the elemental qualities, for Aristotle proves to de anima, that fire is not the cause of growth, but its can cause, so to speak, while its principal cause is the soul, to which heat is compared as the instrument to the craftsman. Consequently the vegetative soul cannot be produced by the mixture of the elements, and much less, therefore, the sense and possible intellect. Again, to understand is an operation in which no bodily organ can possibly communicate. Now this operation is ascribed to the soul, as also to man, for we say that the soul understands all man, by his soul. Consequently there must needs be in man a principle, independent of the body, which is the source of that operation. But the preparedness that results from the mixture of the elements is clearly dependent on the body. Therefore preparedness is not this principle. And yet this latter is the possible intellect, since Aristotle says, the possible intellect is whereby the soul knows and understands. Therefore preparedness is not the possible intellect. If, however, it be said that the principle of the aforesaid operation in us is the intelligible species made actual by the active intellect, this is seemingly insufficient. For, since man from being intentionally understanding is made actually understanding, it follows that not only does he understand by the intelligible species, by which he is made to understand actually, but also by an intellective power, which is the principle of the aforesaid operation, as happens also with the senses. Now Aristotle affirms that this power is the possible intellect. Therefore the possible intellect is independent of the body. Further, the species is not actually intelligible except in so far as it is expurgated of material being. But this cannot happen so long as it is in a material potentiality, which namely is caused from material principles, or is the act of a material organ. Therefore it must be granted that we have in ourselves an intellective power which is immaterial. Again, the possible intellect is described by Aristotle as being part of the soul. Now the soul is not a preparedness but an act, since preparedness is the order of potentiality to act. And yet act is followed by a certain preparedness to a further act. For instance, the act of transparency is followed by an order to the act of light. Therefore the possible intellect is not a mere preparedness, but is an act. Moreover, man obtains species and human nature according to that part of the soul which is proper to him, namely the possible intellect. Now nothing obtains species and nature according as it is in potentiality, but according as it is in act. Since then preparedness is nothing more than order of potentiality to act, it is impossible that the possible intellect be merely a certain preparedness in human nature. Dash.